Number 15, Elk General.
I just like making you run up here, Ken.
Item 15, Elk General and Special Permit Seasons and Regulations. This is also a decision. Thank you, Jerry, again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. One more time for the record, my name is Jerry Nelson. I'm the Deer and Elks section manager for the department. Agenda item 15, I'm going to be talking about the proposals to amend the WACs for the Elk General seasons and the Elk Special Permit seasons. Gave you a more complete briefing in March in Moses Lake, so I'll just touch on a couple of those items here. Our general season and special permit hunting season for 2015 combined was a fairly average year, right at about the 8,000 mark, lower than average, but still sort of normal year would be in the neighborhood of 7,000, and our high years are in the 8,500 to 9,000. So not a lot of variation over the last 15 years, but 2015 wasn't a bad year, fairly average year. Our hunter participation was also fairly static, not a lot of change over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And forgot to mention, our success rate last year was up a tick when you looked at all of the different user groups, up to a little over 11%. That's about a 1 or 1.4% increase over long-term average. So for the background on elk general seasons, WAC 232-28358. It's the second year of a three-year package. We've only got some minor changes recommended. One of those is we're proposing to make the archery and the muzzleloader seasons in GMU 204 the same as neighboring GMU 101. This change is consistent with our Selkirk elk herd management plan, and the change would also address some concerns and requests that our regional staff had heard from landowners in GMU 204. And so it makes sense to have GMU 204 and GMU 101 to be consistent and have the same hunting season structure. And with that, I will move on to elk special permit seasons. And
yes, sir. Jerry, is that you said all user groups, so I'm assuming that's tribal, non-tribal. Is that correct on the harvest level for elk?
No, when I say user groups, I'm only talking about state-sanctioned hunting, and so muzzleloader, modern firearm, and archery.
Do we have the number on the tribal harvest?
Not in that part of the world, no. We have most of the tribal harvest that we have access to is reported on the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission website, and most of that reporting is done by tribes on the west side of the state. We typically don't have tribal harvest reports from, I would say, pretty much all of the tribal governments east of the Cascades.
Thank you.
What state has the highest elk harvest?
Oh, boy. That changes from time to time. I think the last time I paid attention to that, it was Colorado. Montana and Wyoming are up there, too, but Colorado has typically been consistently the highest.
Do you know
the highest.
Roughly that number compared to?
I don't off the top of my head.
60?
Oh, okay.
They've been trying to reduce their elk for the last several years.
Idaho harvests 20, Montana about 26 to 28, and Wyoming in that ballpark too.
So we would. Okay. Any other questions on that?
Yeah, we're not a big elk state. We have more elk hunters per elk than any other western state, and we're smallest in geographic area of all the western elk states, but we're second only to California in human population. So we have a lot of desire and interest around our elk populations, and it's a challenge to provide the opportunity. We're actually quite proud that we're still able to provide general season opportunity for elk hunting in this state.
That number of hunters was 70,000 roughly?
Let's just go back there. A shade under 70,000, yes.
And the take was 8,000 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Any other? Okay, continue on, Jerry.
Thank you. All right. So the next WAC in this agenda item, elk special permits, the WAC 232-28-360, really not a lot of changes here. Pretty standard year. Some of the quality and bull category permits we adjust up and down every year using that same special permit allocation formula. We get the information from the district biologists on how many mature bulls they want to harvest, and then we put it through that same commission approved allocation formula to decide which of the three weapon user groups, how many permits they get. You'll also saw, as I talked about last time, the increase in the Clock'em quality bull permits for this year. A couple of things driving that. We've had a Clock'em bull study going on for the last couple of years. We've got radio collars on animals over there now. We're starting to get a better feel for where those animals are going and why they're not being cooperative at the time of the year when we're counting elk. They're in other places and not on our standard survey winter range survey units. So we're confirming what we've really kind of known, and the public has known, and the hunters have known, that there are more bulls out there. So we are going to be offering more or proposing to offer more bull special permits for the Clock'em population. In addition, we've still got some of those bulls that are radio marked, and so this gives us the opportunity to do a little bit of a survival experiment by upping those bull special permits. What does that translate into in terms of survival mortality harvest on the bulls that we have radio marked? On the Clock'em antlerless permits, as you'll recall, that population has been somewhat high the last few years. We completed our annual aerial surveys after the March meeting. Looking at that information, we're not proposing changing anything that you've already seen. So the recommended permit levels that you have in your notebooks are staying the same. And then the as I mentioned in March, the Yakima antlerless permits are adjusted by location. We've got some ups in some GMUs and some adjustments down in others, but the net change for the entire population is fairly nominal. And so with that, I can entertain any other questions.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other questions from the commission?
Mr. Holzman. There were some issues with elk up in the Skagit Valley. Are you getting a little bit of a handle on that?
Yes, sir, we are. We're just prior to the March meeting, myself and the section manager for the conflict section went up and had another meeting with the landowners, toured around on their properties and got a look at where they're experiencing problems with elk and what kind of problems they're experiencing with elk. We also had the on-the-ground district biologist and the two conflict specialists that work that area quite a bit. And so some of the tools that we're using are permanent fencing, some non-permanent electric fencing and electric fladry. But we do also recognize that we're going to have to remove more antlerless animals off that valley floor. We've got plenty of elk hanging out in the core areas up in the foothills in the forest where everybody wants to have elk, including the landowners. But we've got elk now that are spending the vast majority of their time down on the valley floor where all the agricultural operations are, And we've got to get a better handle on that. So we're putting together some strategies now to try to get at that. And it's definitely going to include more lethal removals, more creative hunting seasons, and probably, because it's time to update the Skagit elk herd plan, we call it the North Cascades elk herd plan, we're also going to have to take a hard look at what that population objective is going to be for that herd.
Mr. Carpenter.
Jerry, I would expect that this morning we passed an item on salvage on vehicle injured or dead animals. If I remember correctly, being I live there, it's about one a week at least that gets hit by a vehicle. Probably going to see a fair number of tonnage coming off the Highway 20 there.
Yes, sir, Highway 20. Yeah, we do have, and that's part of that same valley floor population challenge for us, is that we do have an awful lot of elk hit on Highway 20. And so you're right, there's probably going to be some salvage opportunities there. And I hope our intent is over time we'll reduce some of those salvage opportunities by reducing the valley floor population that's causing a lot of challenges for everybody.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous situation when crossing roads at night, so as you know.
But taking them out a little bit different than a few years ago when it was right alongside the road. It's not good image building now.
True.
Okay, yes, Commissioner.
Well, since I have the opportunity here, I'm trying to remember what I've heard from local people in Pacific County about the change in the muzzleloader season. Last year, there was some opposition to giving the muzzleloaders prime time. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing from a number of hunters that they thought it was a bad idea. And I heard from someone this past winter that it resulted in a lot more harvest of bulls. So what do you know about how it turned out last year? Have you heard complaints, that sort of thing?
Haven't heard any complaints. Our harvest information is available now, and I haven't looked at those GMUs where we change that muzzleloader season. So I'll take a look at how both our modern and our muzzleloader seasons compared to previous years.
Okay.
And typically we'd want to watch that for three years, because 1 year is one data point. But I'll take a look
sure.
at that.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions? Commissioner Carpenter.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend WAC 232, 28, 358, and WAC 232, 28, 360 as proposed.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Thornburg seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
Aye.
Aye. Yes. I'm torn. All those opposed, same sign. You can see it gets late in the day sometimes. Motion carries.